Afternoon now at 12:09. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch. John Williams here. I start at 9. We go till noon. Then we host the Wintrust Business Lunch. Pete Zimmerman is your producer. Our first guest, as always, on Wednesdays is Terry Savage, the nationally syndicated financial columnist. Her column runs in the Tribune Mondays. She joins us Wednesdays, usually for half hour or more. Today, briefly, we've got you for just a few minutes, Terry. I'll take everything I can get.
Hello.
And that's not Terry. That was a guy who said hello.
Should have asked him about the markets.
There's a guy on line one who thinks, oh, boy, I don't think I can do this.
At least it's a short segment.
Hi, Terry.
Hey, Steve.
Hi, Terry. You're on the air. How are you?
Thanks, Steve. And thanks, John. I have a Chicago Mercantile Exchange Board of Directors meeting today. It's an unusual time to have it, so I'm sorry I can't be with you for longer. But you know that my column on Monday, boy, I'm glad I got that posted. I wrote it late last week when gold was just approaching 2,000, and it's hit $2,055 an ounce today, trading about 2,030 right now.
Last you talked about this, you said it's still not too late. You would not discourage people from investing in gold stocks or actual gold?
Trying to figure out whether 2,050 is too high or it's going to go straight up another 100 or 2 points or back off. That's not my specialty. My specialty is figuring out what's out of fashion. The previous gold column was written about 18 months before when gold was around $1,200 an ounce. And I said, you know, what's so interesting is that some big names are thinking about gold. It's interesting that we're printing all this money and nobody's thinking about gold. 18 months ago was before the pandemic. It was just when we were having huge budget deficits. So I think my personal opinion, I mean, I'm invested in it. I have been for a long time, and I think the price of gold will go higher. I don't think that's a wonderful thing for America. It means that we are printing money and not doing much else with our economy, but it's a way to hedge some other exposures. I mean, gold is nowhere near as exciting as some of the vaccine stocks, the Tesla, Nikola, you know, rally, the tech stocks, but it's just something nobody's talked about for a while.
I suppose the tech stocks would be insulated even if there's not a vaccine, but if these three promising vaccine trials don't prove to be as promising as we thought, I shudder to think what that would do to not only those company stocks, but the market in general. It seems like it's the hope for a vaccine that's really keeping everything up.
It is, and it's not only for the market in general, but for the economy in general, so people have the confidence to go to a movie theater or a restaurant. And so this is very critical, this vaccine thing. And, you know, if free enterprise helps with some government, big doses of government money, can do anything, this will be the time that will prove that we have we've got to believe in science and we've got to let the market do its work.
Terry, what should I think about Nancy Pelosi's statement that she does have a number, and it's $3.4 trillion for the next round? What do you make of that? Is that irresponsible? Is that necessary? Where are you on that?
I want to drink whatever she's drinking. It's probably a very excellent wine, not Kool-Aid. Look, it is the job right now of the Democrats, who are in a unique position finally. Although they don't have the numbers on their side, they have the need on their side. So they're grasping for everything. Things that maybe don't deserve to be done, things like bailing out cities and state governments and so forth. I think, you know, for 2 weeks I said, we're going to have this right away. They're going to be throwing money at you. They want to buy your vote. We'll have a stimulus right away. But now I'm going to say they do want to go on vacation. So they don't dare go home to their home districts without something. So it's the 10th is when they're leaving, so you've got a few more days for them to work out a deal. And I bet it comes last minute Friday or maybe over the weekend and gets announced Monday. And it'll be somewhere in between.
Well, there's maybe more than two populations out there, but if you thought of the population of people that will be getting $600 as a bump or a $1,200 stimulus, and those who won't be are fortunate enough to be working, I wonder what the answers for each group what's best for everybody? Should we give people 1,200 plus 600 again, or should we not? Because as a person who's working and hasn't missed a paycheck yet, I'm willing to send 600 to everybody and 1,200 to everybody.
That's not going
to
happen.
If you tell
that's
me that's even, what we should do.
That's not even on the table anymore. There's three aspects of this, so let's start with the unemployment. It looks like both the White House, the Republicans, and the Democrats are going to compromise on $400. It's just purely a compromise. Our government, up until the last two decades, was always about compromise, and that will be helpful, $400 continuing. It will take away some of the incentives to stay home. People start thinking, maybe I better get a job while the jobs, you know, while there are jobs to get, kind of a thing. So $600 is not a number you're going to see again. I would really bet a lot on that. The other issue is a stimulus check. I haven't even heard the numbers they're negotiating, but it's a wave the wand kind of thing. It's money that magically appears, which is why you have gold soaring, because you can't wave a wand or spin straw into gold like Rumpelstiltskin. I mean, so that's probably could be another $1,200. And then I'll be in business for the next 6 months trying to figure out how to help people get the second stimulus check as opposed to the first one, which many still haven't gotten. And then the other programs that have to do with business and getting loans to small businesses, this huge consortium of small business experts led by the chairman of Starbucks, trying to get money directly so businesses don't close down forever, versus PPP money versus who knows what else. So it's not easy to say what's best. What will be best is if Congress does something now.
That's the end of that sentence. I thought you were just swallowing and saying, now, here's my...
No, I figured I'd take a breath and let you get... I was pausing every once in a while in case you wanted to challenge me. Funny being on the phone with you instead of in studio.
Challenge isn't the right word. It's nice to talk to you, Terry. You've got to go. We'll take a break here. We'll visit with you at greater length and take more calls. Take calls next Wednesday, okay?
Absolutely. Thanks.
That's Terry Savage. You can read her at terrysavage.com. On the Wintrust Business Lunch, Terry Savage again will join us next Wednesday. We usually give her two or three of our segments, but she had to go to some fancy-dancy board meeting that sounded very important and consequential, so she'll join us next week. We got time, therefore, for Kimberly Barris, who is the president and CEO of the Magnificent Mile Association. Visit themagnificentmile.com. Kimberly, you're on WGN Radio. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, John. Thanks for having me.
How's business on the Mag Mile these days?
Well, I would say most of our stores are open. I'm happy to say Nike and Disney have opened, and I know those are fan favorites on the mile. So we're seeing signs of a slow recovery, but this has by no means been an easy 3 months. I mean, that's an understatement, and I know it's not easy for anyone anywhere.
You represented an association that has 700 members. Is it Michigan Avenue, or do you also go a little west of there?
No, it's the whole district. We have 65,000 pins properties within our district, so it's quite large. It goes from the expressway to Division and all the way to the lake. It's quite large.
And what's the hope for the district then? I mean, I wonder what sort of the dominoes are that need to fall for you to be back to full speed. Is it people more comfortable riding public transportation? Is it stores even being open? Is it capacity of the stores, not 25% or 50 people? What's your sort of wish list to get people back downtown?
Well, can I take that wish list and just build on it, John?
Keep going.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to pick one particular thing. Of course, at the beginning, March 13th, when many of us left our offices and started to hunker down at home, we would have said the world pandemic. That certainly is a concern, a continuing concern. You can't escape the fact that we're in a world pandemic. But we certainly have seen, effects of that. People have decamped to their summer homes, to their second homes. Workers have gone back to live with their folks while they're waiting for jobs to get sorted out. We've security and safety continue to be a top priority for us, not just the coronavirus, but also regular safety and security. We've had, as you know, some civil unrest in our district, and, yeah. and that's been a rebuilding process too. So I would say, you know, start that list and continue. I would take one thing off the list that you had, though, which is the capacity limits. We initially thought that those would be a concern, but we've got plenty of capacity at our attractions, our boats, the tours that are offered by our museums. So people can feel very safe going to those kinds of institutions and doing those kinds of activities without fear of being in any kind of crowd.
I'll second that emotion. I'm looking at my producer, Pete, and he's heard me say probably every other day on this show, come downtown. The boats mm-hmm. are not maxed out. There's plenty of distancing on them, and even the chairs that are mm-hmm. there, their availabilities. You want to eat outside, you can eat safely outside. You want to shop, you may stand in a line at the Gap store or one of those shops, you will at the Apple store, but you'll get in. And when you get in, those are very efficient operations these days.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way,
yep.
the city's less trampled on. It's there's less hooves on grass, and everywhere you go, I think it looks spectacular. It's a good time mm-hmm. to see the mm-hmm. city, isn't it?
It is. You know, we were kind of saying to ourselves that the tulips had never looked better than this
so
May,
so
this
true.
April and May. They were just glorious.
Mm-hmm. What are the? I wonder what the safeguards are then that the shops and restaurants are engaging in. For instance, I don't know, hand sanitizers or making sure people are wearing masks. I wonder what special precautions or how well they're doing that in the stores in the Mag Mile.
They're doing it really well in our district, John. In fact, I just conveyed to the city, both to the commissioner of BACP and to the mayor herself yesterday in a call that we had, that we appreciate the mayor and the city enforcing the social distancing and PPE and, you know, all of the guidelines that the city has issued. We appreciate them enforcing them and cracking down on bad actors because our members are the good actors. And, you know, the bad apple can spoil the barrel. So we've got masks and we've got social distancing and we're doing temperature checks at different stores. They're taking it very, very seriously. We have yet to have any one of our members cited for any issue. It's just we take it very, very seriously. We recognized early on that if we did not raise our standards and ensure the safety of our customers wouldn't come back.
Yeah. No, I've known that. And, you know, listen, I walk or ride throughout the city all the time. Every day mm-hmm. I come downtown, I'm speaking to you at 303 East Wacker right now, and I'm looking mm-hmm. over at the old Tribune Tower. And I see lines of people getting into some of the stores, which is hopeful, and everybody's wearing
yeah.
a mask. And the staff
mm-hmm.
that's manning the door is making
yep.
sure you have a mask.
Absolutely. I was a member of the mayor's retail task force that put together those guidelines for retailers. And we said to the city, mandate it. Frankly, mandate masks. We were grateful to have the state issue the mandates as well because it takes the pressure off
right.
the staff. It's just an expectation, and it is uniformly applied throughout our district and should be throughout the city.
You mentioned a couple, but what would you describe are some of the retail magnets or maybe restaurant magnets for the Magnificent Mile? You said Nike and Disney are big draws. That Starbucks was going to be. What else is pulling people down to the city? What do you see when you get here?
Well, we just had two of our rooftop bars reopen, Z-Bar at the Peninsula and the I.O. Godfrey, and those are two of the best rooftop bars in the country. And the fact that they are open, the Peninsula just reopened, the Ritz-Carlton just reopened after a massive renovation that they completed. It's gorgeous. So you can stay in a brand-new room at the Ritz-Carlton. There's nothing like that. The boats and the Riverwalk. The Riverwalk opened a few weeks ago. You know, they opened it in stages, and that is such a draw. There, as you were talking about, the lack of people really – it means there's a lot of space for people downtown, and that's unusual. You know, we don't usually experience, you know, wide open spaces. But the way that Michigan Avenue was built, that comes out of the plan of Chicago, Burnham's 1909 plan of Chicago, and Michigan Avenue was built in the style of the Champs-Élysées in Paris. There is a reason that it is such a wide boulevard. and now is the perfect time to come down and enjoy it. The Art Institute just reopened. The MCA reopened. So there's a lot that's happening happily on the avenue.
Some of the restaurants want you to make a reservation. Now, I've been recommending people do it, even if you're thinking lunch, just so you'll make sure mm-hmm. that you get a chance to sit down. Is that your mm-hmm. advice, too?
It is. Absolutely, it's our advice. It helps our restaurateurs plan out, customers and the timing of turning tables. Mm-hmm. It's always great to call ahead. And if anybody has any questions, wants general information, you mentioned our website, themagnificentmile.com. That's a great source of information as well.
900 North Michigan Avenue, Water Tower Place, those are malls downtown. Are mm-hmm. those open? Are those running all the stores?
They're running almost all the stores. They're definitely open, as is the shop at Northbridge.
Yeah, I guess that's what I'm thinking of. Or no, the shop, which is the one that Nordstrom is in?
Nordstrom is the shop at Northbridge.
Yeah, right, okay.
900 North is Bloomingdale's.
Right.
And Water, yeah, and everyone knows Water Tower Place.
Yeah, no kidding. Mm-hmm, what about the mm-hmm. Special Olympics ducks on Michigan Avenue, John? Are they going to float those? I'll bet not, but I'll ask you.
That is a virtual duck derby tomorrow, and that supports the Special Olympics of Illinois.
Oh, no kidding. How do you do that mm-hmm. virtually?
I'm going to tune in as well. but we're learning to do so much virtually these days.
Yeah, no kidding. But the ducks won't be down there. Don't come down to see them. But do come down to see the beautiful city and take advantage of it. And good grief, spend some money. Kimberly, good luck to you guys.
Thank you very much.
An event is coming up, virtually or otherwise. If we can spread the news about retail downtown, you let us know.
Absolutely, we will. Thanks so much for having us.
Kimberly Behrs is the president and CEO of the Magnificent Mile Association. Visit themagnificentmile.com. Tom Gimbel will say hi to us in a couple of minutes from the LaSalle Network. He'll be talking about tips for the unemployed who will have significant cuts in benefits. Some of you, I guess you would say, already have. Will those be renewed? And what can you do to maybe make your life a little more comfortable in the interim? He'll talk about that. Speaking of making your life just a little more comfortable, this is Kevin Gillespie. He's the president of Headline Solar. The website is headlinesolar.com. Kevin, thanks for joining us. You're on WGN.
All right. Thanks for having me.
You guys do solar panels, right?
Yes, we are currently the fastest growing solar development company in the Midwest.
So how does that work? Are you working with residential or businesses? I know that you guys are putting in Bloomingdale on top of that Mazzone pasta plant a giant array of panels, right?
Yeah, we're putting 286 panels on their roof right now. It's it's a 30,000 square foot facility. We'll produce about 143,000 kilowatt hours of electricity for them. And we're primarily residential, but, when commercial jobs come our way, it's hard to turn them down. We're willing to help anybody.
What's the biggest challenge for you to get somebody to say, yeah, let's do the solar panels? Is it the aesthetics? Is it the science? Is it convincing them that they'll make money on their investment? How do you get people to say, yeah, I'm in?
If we start diving into the technical aspects of it, it's going to turn into a no for sure. But once people start realizing they can turn it into, a static monthly payment instead of paying an increase every year or, a fluctuating bill every month, it's kind of an easy sell. And, one of the questions that we ask people when we speak to them, as far as aesthetics are concerned is, we say, well, what color is your neighbor's roof? And they can never tell us. So with the aesthetics, we're using black on black, beautiful panels. And they fit right in, and, when people notice them, they always talk about them.
When you talk to people about it, I suspect they want to know what happens to my bill. That is, what percentage of my bill that I have now will I be generating with my solar panels? Is my bill going to go down 50%, 20%? How does that work out usually?
Sure. Our goal is to get the homeowners to 100% offset, which means that we're going to create 100% of their energy from solar. And that would just leave them basically with a connection fee from Con Ed because we still have to tie into their grid.
Do some people generate 110%? Are they able to sell back into the grid?
Overproduction, we can go up to 110%. Anything above that, and we will get rejected. But when they're selling the energy back, it's all part of the net metering process. So as they generate more, It kind of ebbs and flows throughout the year, and it goes from April to April with the payouts. And, you know, they're typically getting a $0 bill. And if they get something back at the end of the year, it's just, you know, it's a bonus.
Now, there's I know people that have done this, and they show their ComEd bill to their friends and neighbors. Go, check this out. They go, where? Look at that. It's 78 cents or something like that. This must be a mistake. Well, no, it's not. I've got solar panels. So that's very, very exciting. But does that happen all year long? Because we have less daylight in the winter, for instance, and cloudy winters sometimes in Chicago. What happens then?
Yeah, so with the software that we use, it kind of shows us December to December output. So during the winter, you know, we've got some cloud coverage and it's, you know, daylight is shorter. But in the summer months, we're making pretty good energy. So their production goes way up in the summer, and as their consumption goes down throughout, you know, during the winter, then it kind of balances out. So we build the systems to offset both in winter and summer.
Well, when it's cloudy, is there still enough radiant light to generate power or electricity on your panels? Does it have to be sunshine, or can you actually have the meter spinning in the right direction if it's cloudy?
Yeah, so, you know, the biggest thing that we talk about, or one of the most important things we talk about, is, you know, if you go to the beach on a cloudy day and you don't wear sunscreen, you're still going to get burned. So we're still getting ample production and ample generation during those cloudy days. So, yes, if it is overcast, we're still going to get decent production.
Do they have to be on my roof, or say I don't have, you know, favorable light on my roof? Could you put panels up in the yard, or do you put them on stands? I mean, I wonder how you accomplish that.
Yeah, if you have enough room in your yard and your municipality will allow it, we can do a ground mount system. It's a little bit bigger and a little more cumbersome, but it's achievable. Doing it on the roof is mostly what people are going for.
Is the government subsidizing or rebating any of these costs? Because I know there have been programs to help businesses and individuals pay for solar panels. Is there anything like that?
Yeah, the federal tax credit is at 26% this year. It'll go down next year. So the time now is the time to switch. And then we also have renewable energy credits that are based on how much production your system creates. And with those two incentives combined, the system cost is reduced by up to 50%.
26% federal tax credit. I don't know what that means. Tax on what? The cost of the project?
It's the cost of your project. We can take 26% of that project and apply it to the taxes that you would have paid this year. Now, I'm not a tax advisor, so I just want to put that out there. But you can take the savings, the 26% savings from the system, and apply it to your taxes that would be paid in 2020.
Yeah, well, I don't want to get too far out into an area that maybe you're not expert in, but is it 26% of the cost of the panels, or my property taxes, 26% of what?
Yeah, it's 26% of the cost of the installation of the system.
Yeah. I like the sound of that. I suppose that's compelling to people, too. I mean, I just think what they do is they must face the upfront costs, and then you have to persuade them that you're going to make it back as soon as possible. 26% helps.
Yes, yes. Once they see, you know, it's almost instant savings, because we take the average of your ComEd bill throughout the year and give you a number per month that you would be paying for ComEd, and then we build your solar system to offset that. And, you know, they're seeing, you know, almost a $15 decrease per month when they're paying for solar versus paying for ComEd.
I used to do commercials for a company like yours when I lived and worked in Minnesota. And so help me, I have it in my mind, maybe this is impossible, but I remember a guy saying, one of their happy customers, a listener to my station at the time, that he would look at his meter and it would be spinning the other direction rather than constantly going the one way, because you're using electricity and your refrigerator's running and you're watching a color TV. It's now going the other way. He was generating. That sounds apocryphal, but I suppose something like that essentially is true, huh?
Well, you know, most of the meters that we install through, our interconnection goes through, it's called a smart meter, and it's digital now. So you won't be able to see it go backwards, but you may see it stuck on a number, or the number will go backwards, but you just won't be able to see that that dial spinning in reverse.
I like the dial spinning in reverse. It was very beautiful for somebody like me.
It gives you the satisfaction.
Well, that's really what it is about, isn't it? Kevin Gillespie is the president of Headline Solar. Visit headlinesolar.com. Good luck to you guys. Keep up the good work, Kevin. We wish you well.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
You have a great day.
You too. It's 12:42. All right, let's catch you up on some other business news with Steve Bertrand.
Wind the clock. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, your daily roundup of Chicago area business news. It's one thing to hit a fastball, but it's another thing for high school athletes to academically qualify for college. Chicago Inno says Honest Game creates a tool to help high school athletes navigate the college eligibility process. The startup works with public and private high schools, coaches, counselors, and more. A Chicago fintech entrepreneur and a LaSalle Street bank are tackling one of the biggest headaches in the marijuana business. Most transactions are done in cash. Crane says Spence Labs built a mobile payments app that allows people to purchase marijuana products with their phones. And Open House Chicago is a big hit for architectural fans. Each year it gives people a chance to tour inside some of Chicago's most notable buildings. But not so much this year. The tours will be limited to the outside of the buildings only. That's because of the pandemic. That's the Wintrust Business Minute. I'm Steve Bertrand.
Up next, it's Tom Gimbel, founder and CEO of LaSalle Network, thelasallenetwork.com. Hey, Tom, you're on WGN. Thanks for joining us today.
Great to be with you, John.
What's front and center? There's a few things I particularly want to talk to you about, but maybe you're looking at the stimulus, the unemployment check, or just the economy in general. What's on your mind today?
Well, I'm a little bit apprehensive, John. You know, we're sitting here in a situation where, for all intents and purposes, the government laid off 20 million people last Friday. So we've got that situation. We've got people who are afraid to go into the workplace. And there is a small portion of people that don't want to go into the workplace. At the same time, we have the airlines where their government bailout is the restrictions are ending, and it sounds like they're going to be laying some people off. So I'm not as optimistic as I used to be going into the end of the third quarter.
Is this the same Tom Gimbel I talked to last time?
Hey, we got to be realistic. Now, what I believe is that there's a lot of business opportunities, and I believe that there are a lot of jobs. What I also believe is that we've got to be safe, wear face masks, but people are going to have to leave their house to go get a job and get some income coming in the door.
What do you mean there's going to be a lot of jobs or there are a lot of jobs? You mean there's a lot of potential for jobs? There are more people looking for jobs than there are jobs.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. The biggest intersection of problem here, John, is that the majority of people who were let go were service workers, restaurants, hotels, and the majority of job openings are white-collar and office jobs. And a lot of times the skill sets don't intersect. However, there are companies, call center has increased a lot. IT help desk, which is a quasi-customer service, if you know about computers and putting things together, those jobs. Mortgage processing. There's a lot of more entry-level or more clerical-based jobs that in a true recession, you take anything you can get, those jobs exist.
I want to read to you something that was in Forbes. I saw it the other day, and then Pete showed it to me again today. This is a piece from Jim Wang, and he says, one of the key arguments against the $600 enhanced unemployment benefit is that some people have received more in unemployment than they would have in wages. And Ted Cruz talked about this the other day, and I sort of doubted it. I sort of dismissed it out of hand, but here Forbes is again saying what Cruz said, and that is the National Bureau of Economic Research estimates that two-thirds of unemployed workers received benefits greater than their lost earnings, and a fifth received benefits that are at least twice their lost wages. Given that study, it's natural to assume that two-thirds of unemployed workers would not return to work if you give them $600, maybe $400, who knows. But they write this, we find no evidence that more generous benefits disincentivized workers, either at the onset or the expansion, as firms looked to return to business over time. Point is, yes, it's been very generous. I don't know if you would call it very generous. It's more than some people were making. But those people would go back to work, almost all of them, if they could. Do you agree with that?
I don't agree with that. No, I think there are some people that would. and there are some people that wouldn't. I mean, this is human nature. Change the numbers. Like, people always want to say that the people, these people where $50,000, which is what the total of state and federal unemployment right now is paying, is about $50,000 if it were annualized.
Yeah.
And people go, well, that means that the people weren't making a lot of money to begin with. They were only making $30,000 or $35,000. And how do you raise a family or have a life on that? Those wages were too low. Make the numbers different, John. If somebody was making $100,000 a year and unemployment was paying them $150,000 a year, would they be in a huge rush to go back for the 100? Some would. Some wouldn't. But there would be a big population that would say, wait a second, I can make 50% more money by not working? So there is a human nature aspect, no matter where the wages are, that there is a percentage of the population that would rather do nothing for money than do something to earn it.
I understand that some people don't have jobs to go back to, but assuming you're a person who does and you're getting unemployment benefits, and it's, say, unemployment plus 600, I think that one of the things that also gets lost in the conversation is that those people may be losing their health coverage. And so if the $600 puts you over what you were previously making, but now you're on COBRA, which is very expensive, $600 doesn't seem to be overly generous. Some people are breaking even just with their insurance benefits alone.
Well, if you're that is true. However, a lot of companies, if you've been furloughed, are continuing to pay your health insurance, and if the work is part-time, it shouldn't interfere with that. So there is different issues and different challenges, but I know this, John, if you don't apply for a job, you can never turn one down.
Do you think then that, I mean, what's your crystal ball say about what's going to happen with the Congress? They are trillions of dollars apart. How do you guess it's going to shake out, Tom?
I think that there'll be a combination, a hybrid plan of reduced benefit to not work, but I think there'll also be some incentivization where they'll give you benefits if you actually go back to get a job. And, you know, one of the things I've been talking about a lot, John, is it's baffling to me the public-private partnership to find a cure for COVID, and there isn't a public-private partnership to figure out the IRS and the Treasury system and getting people the right amount of money based for what they are. Think about this. If the government would have given everybody exactly what they made last year,
yeah,
there'd really be no issue, right?
Right.
Because you wouldn't have the people that would say, oh, some people just don't want to work. And to all of your listeners, I'm saying this. There are a lot of people that do want to work. I'm not saying this is a wide net. I'm just saying whether it's 10 or 20 or 30% of the population that would rather not work and make more money. It's not even an illogical thought.
Yeah, right. The excuse was that they had to throw together the program so quickly that there just wasn't time to do that calculation. They've got more time now. They can't even agree on the numbers, and they aren't calculating it that way. Tom Gimbel's the founder and CEO of LaSalle Network. Minute and a half left, Tom. Give me some advice for people who are looking to find a job during the pandemic.
So I think the key is, what are you comfortable doing and what have you been doing? When I speak to people who are unemployed or are going to be looking for a job, we've had 4 months of being at home, and if you've been out of a job, what have you done to improve your skills? There's got to be some accountability. It's not too late to start, but take Microsoft Office skills, Word, Excel, PowerPoint. Learn how to do those things, and you can market that out. Be open to doing call center and customer service jobs. More and more of those are being flexible to work from home. You may have to go into the office for training and orientation, but those are jobs that are readily available. As more people are working from home, there's more customer service needs. They're entry level, but guess what? It gets your foot in the door with a lot of great companies that are doing some hiring during this recession.
Yeah, you also said be flexible. If this isn't your comfort zone, now's the time to get more comfortable with something you ain't comfortable with. That's just where it is right now.
There's a heck of a lot more options now for people than there were in 1929 and 1930. And sometimes we do have to draw a parallel, and misery loves company, and we got to say, listen, the job may not be what I want. The job may not be what I had, but it's a job, and someone's willing to pay me. And that's how you, and I know this from personal experience. It feels good to be going into an office. It feels good to be contributing, and you don't get that when you're sitting on the couch.
Tom Gimbel, he is with the LaSalle Network. Visit thelasallenetwork.com. Founder and CEO there. Nice to talk to you today, Tom. Thanks for joining us.
Stay healthy, John.
That's the plan.